Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Here's what Salt Lake's talking about. We could put up $2 billion for two new districts in Salt Lake City. Downtown, billionaire Ryan Smith wants a new shared arena for the Utah Jazz and his dream hockey team. And a few miles west, the Larry H. Miller Company is getting their ducks in a row for a Major League Baseball stadium. Major League Baseball team, TBD. However you spin it, sales tax, rental car tax, it is a combined $2 billion in public money. So, from open-air bars to Taylor Swift, what should we be asking for in return? It's Monday, March 25th. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune Jazz Beat reporter. We officially have two new laws on the books to create sports stadiums in Salt Lake City. One for Major League Baseball on the west side and another to bring an NHL team downtown and keep the Utah Jazz in Salt Lake City. Now, we thought the Jazz were moving to Draper. You reported it. We reported it. What happened?
Yeah, it is a weird story, and I think what I've heard is kind of at the beginning of the session, that was still kind of the Smith Group's original plan, is to try to make that happen. I think a couple things here kind of came where they tried to say that there would be kind of a two-arena solution, one where an arena happened down at the Point or elsewhere further south. That would be for NHL while keeping the Jazz here in Salt Lake City.
And just quickly, Smith Entertainment Group, I got to clarify, that's Ryan Smith's organization, owns the Jazz. Keep going.
Correct, yeah. So there, I think we're trying to push kind of a two-arena answer to this, right? Where the NHL arena would be down further south, either Draper or wherever, and the Jazz would stay downtown, either at the Delta Center or somewhere else. And I don't know that there was a lot of buy-in from the legislature and kind of everybody about that idea. I don't know that there was a lot of belief that I think people thought, hey, Ryan's just going to move the Jazz to the new arena whenever that happens. I also think that there was a effort made by the LDS Church to keep the Jazz in Salt Lake City. From what I understand, they were among kind of a number of Salt Lake City invested groups that really tried to make it so that the Jazz stayed downtown rather than move to the suburbs.
I mean, they own a lot of the real estate downtown.
For sure. They own a lot of the real estate and, frankly, you know, are important in the hearts and minds of a lot of the state legislators. Mm-hmm. And of Ryan Smith, who is LDS as well. So, like, I think that's an important part of the story. But I don't think that they were the only voice to kind of try to keep the Jazz downtown. You know, obviously, Salt Lake City Mayor Aaron Mendenhall wanted the Jazz to stay, didn't want the Jazz to leave kind of in her term during her time in charge. From what I understand, like, there's been efforts from the University of Utah as well to keep the Jazz in Salt Lake City. So kind of you had these really important Salt Lake City groups come together and say, hey, you know, we actually think it's better for the state, for the team, for you guys to keep the Jazz downtown, and we're willing to work pretty hard politically to make that happen with a kind of, well, a very big taxpayer public money financing situation going here.
I mean, the kind of whole pitch with the new stadium downtown is that the NHL team and the Utah Jazz would play in the same arena. How likely is it, though, that we actually get an NHL team? Like, feels so hard to untangle, like, what's fantasy and what's reality in all of these proposals?
For me, too, and it's my job to try to figure it out, and it's you know, still hard to figure out. I'll say that, you know, like, you have the Smith Group that feels very optimistic that they're going to get an NHL team soon. Then you have the kind of NHL-associated people that point out that the NHL is just barely expanded to 32 teams. That's kind of the maximum that we have in sports leagues in America. and that an expansion to 33 or 34 would be kind of unusual and weird and isn't necessarily on the docket. Then you have people who maybe the Coyotes are a solution, right? The Phoenix Coyotes moving to Utah, depending on how their stadium situation goes, they may buy some land down there. They may not be able to. There's a public auction going on over actually in the next couple of months that kind of determines that. Maybe that's an answer. I mean, the truth is, it's hard to know how much of this is posturing and how much of this is real. In the end, the decision is made by the 32 NHL owners, whether or not they want kind of an expansion franchise in Salt Lake City, whether they want the expansion fee Ryan would pay of over $1 billion in order to get an NHL team. And that would kind of split that $1 billion or plus would split among the 32 NHL owners, and they would just get a check for whatever that math is.
Wait, what? That's how that works? It's like they're like a little cooperative?
But yeah, but then on the downside, then they have to split the TV money, you know, 34 ways instead of 32 ways. So like you get a big initial check, and it might help grow the league in some way. But yeah, now all of a sudden your portion of the pie is a little bit smaller.
I mean, if I'm Ryan Smith and I've got a PowerPoint presentation to present to all these people, I'm probably bragging about how loyal Jazz fans are.
For sure. You're bragging about how loyal Jazz fans are. You're bragging about Salt Lake City being a growing market, a young market. So you're trying to build the kind of the NHL's future fan base, if you will. You're bragging about Silicon Slopes and the sponsorship money that can come into not only the team locally, but nationally, you hope. Those are kind of his pitches to bring hockey to Utah. And actually, by the way, same for the Millers with trying to bring baseball to Utah as well. Like, in the end, it's the owners who make the decision, and they just have to kind of decide whether or not that losing that share of those percentage pieces of the pie is worth that big paycheck at the beginning, kind of when you consider the future revenues that you're going to have.
It feels like there is maybe another player at this table, or at least that Salt Lake City and Utah leaders want to come to the table with these stadium deals, and that is the Olympics. And our Olympic bid, I thought it was really interesting that the International Olympic Committee was like, whether or not we come to Salt Lake in 2034, like, please don't act like you're building this NHL arena for us. Like, we don't, leave us out of it. And I'm like, gosh, the IOC, like, notoriously sketchy when it comes to I don't know, rules and regulations. Like, interesting to see them be like, leave us out of it.
Yeah, for sure. I think they want to avoid the political fallout of that, right? Like, they have been killed over and over and over again for, and in all their various host cities, for building these stadiums and building these arenas that don't get used at all or very much after the Olympics leave. Luckily, that hasn't been the case in Salt Lake City. You know, Salt Lake City's famously done a very good job of using its Olympic venues, but they don't want, you know, elsewhere that hasn't been the case. And they don't, that's a very sensitive political issue for them. They want other cities to kind of see Salt Lake City as a model where you don't necessarily have to build a gazillion different things in order to host an Olympics. They've really kind of overturned new management and that kind of thing to make it look a lot better just to host an Olympics, what that means for a host city. So, yeah, like, I also think that that's interesting that, like, the IOC's not letting them be used as kind of a public pawn in this argument that and instead it really has to come down to these teams making the case that they can get expansion franchises from either NHL or MLB in order to make it happen. Because, you know, honestly, the IOC is really agnostic on whether or not these things get built.
I want to talk a little bit about downtown Salt Lake City, because depending on whether you are pro these stadium deals or opposed to these stadium deals, you either see downtown Salt Lake as a victim or a victor in the reorganization of these arenas. With the NHL and the NBA Sports District in particular, Utah Jazz owner Ryan Smith has said, and this is a quote because I'm fascinated by it, "This is not about an arena. It's about revitalizing a downtown that desperately needs investment." Now, we in Salt Lake City have heard time and time again that our downtown is thriving. We're bouncing back at, you know, rates higher than the national average since the pandemic, which is true. Does downtown need more investment, or is it thriving?
To me, it depends what parts of downtown you hang out in, right? Like, And for Ryan Smith, he's going to the arena and going home.
Right.
You know, I don't see Ryan Smith bar hopping on Main Street very often. And so, like, to me, there are really fun and exciting parts of downtown that are obviously growing, and you're seeing new development and apartments come in and blah, 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 you know, all this other kind of cool stuff. The area around the Delta Center, you've got the West Quarter on one corner, which is coming in with new hotels and restaurants. That's kind of the second west, first south kind of area. But you don't have a ton of stuff around there. You know, the Gateway is kind of struggling still. Obviously, you kind of have a continual homeless issue there, despite kind of Operation Rio Grande trying to shove everyone out.
Yeah.
And I think they see it as a negative. And I think they see that as an opportunity to fix that. You know, and in particular, you know, Ryan Smith, I do think, has a well-intentioned hero complex, right? Like, I think he does want to do good things for whatever it is in Utah that he's kind of working on, but also wants it to be very clear that, like, he's the one making the change. And so I think they see this opportunity. And, like, the bill is crazy. The bill says they can have up to 100 acres of land, which is 10 city blocks to do this in.
Massive.
Realistically, we're talking 4 or 5 blocks at most. But, like, that to me anyway... but they see that as kind of an opportunity to change kind of a narrative around downtown that I think, truthfully, yeah, a lot of, like, suburban Utahns believe, even if it's not the reality of what downtown Salt Lake City is.
In terms of, like, a stadium being an investment in an area, how true is that notion? Like, my sense is, in some ways, sometimes these arenas can create a bit of a vacuum for surrounding businesses.
Yeah, that's honestly reality. There's honestly maybe nothing in economic research that has been studied more than this. Like, when you put an arena in a place, it does not economically flourish. Like, it does not all of a sudden change the economic fortunes of an area. You don't see increased income, you don't see increased wages, you don't see increased GDP. You have some benefits on game days for restaurant and kind of bar adjacent businesses. You see some increases on game days for hotel stays. You also see some real declines in an area. So, like, retail businesses generally lose out in an area around an arena. You have some, like, transportation and parking and crime kind of issues that happen as a result around some arenas. And, you know, I think the idea that you can just kind of fix a downtown, if, you know, to whatever extent that an area is broken, by putting an arena there, just doesn't stand up to even, like, the slightest bit of scrutiny. I mean, I can't, you know, I travel for the jazz beat writing job. Like, I'm going to stadiums around the country, and there are a lot of areas around arenas that are pretty broken down and you know, maybe not fun sports and entertainment districts. And you know, even the ones that do have sports and entertainment districts don't see them used sometimes as frequently as I think their owners would initially hope. You know, honestly, for, like, the Gateway is a entertainment district right next to a sports arena right now, right? Like, we do kind of already have what we're talking about here. And no one would call, like, the Gateway in 2024, like, a rousing success, right? Like, it's not what it once was and is kind of half full, but is has some nice amenities, but is not brilliant. And so...
Okay, but the Gateway could be cured if you could just carry a beer around there. Like, if the Gateway had its own liquor license and, like, all of the Gateway was, like, bars and restaurants and you could, like, travel with a beer around the Gateway, I really think that would be the silver bullet.
I'm with you, Allie. And honestly, so, like, when I went to Atlanta to kind of go to the Battery, which is the model for the Miller's plans for the ballpark district, you can actually carry a beer around there. And it rules, right? Like, they have little to-go windows of, like, the TGI Fridays that's there or whatever, right? Where you go up and order a beer at, like, an outside window and then walk around with it. Great. I don't know that that's going to happen in Utah. We'll see. I will say I'm, like, moderately optimistic about that because in the newest liquor bill, there is a carve-out for the area between South Temple and First South and West Temple and Fourth West for bars to be founded without the problems of being too close to a community district. So that's, to be clear, those three blocks that I talked about are the current block of the Delta Center and 2 blocks of the Salt Palace. And so I also thought that that was an interesting kind of cue as to where the city and legislature is really looking at putting this in and maybe tearing out parts of the Salt Palace in order to make this happen.
Pacific Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita. A delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave, and they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
I want to hear more about the Sports and Entertainment District in Atlanta that the Millers are looking at as a model for the MLB District in Fair Park. I know also we're talking about stadiums here. We are now, listeners, moving from Jazz NBA downtown to proposed MLB District in Fair Park, Poplar Grove. What did you see that you liked there or didn't like?
Yeah, so it's called the Battery, and it's about 10 miles away from downtown Atlanta. So it's actually way further out than the Power District is compared to downtown.
Okay.
So I didn't like that. But it is kind of similar in vibe to the Gateway, and the Millers have hired the same construction company that they used at the Battery in Atlanta to try to build their thing at the Power District. So it does feel like a busy gateway with maybe more of an emphasis on shops and restaurants. It has better like theming around baseball. Like the outdoor seating, for example, is like made out of like baseball stadium chairs, for example. There's kind of like more brick and stuff around. There's more like Atlanta Braves flags and stores and signage kind of everywhere.
So it would give the gateway an identity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, honestly, it does feel like the gateway with an identity. And the other kind of main thing that the Battery has kind of over the gateway is they have all of these office buildings there that kind of, and apartment buildings that are a lot closer than the gateways are, kind of on top of the shops and restaurants. So you kind of get that effect at the gateway, but it's a little bit set back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, multi-use. We hear about that all the time with new developments in Salt Lake.
They actually did a good job of making buildings multi-use and getting large-scale corporations to stay there. So, like, Papa John's has its global headquarters at the Battery in Atlanta. Comcast's regional headquarters is at the Battery in Atlanta. So you actually end up getting...
Do they have CNN?
CNN is not there, but the Weather Channel is across the freeway.
I love the Weather Channel.
So, like, you end up having, like, these thousands and thousands of employees who are there for their workday and end up, during the day, make it feel much more alive than the Gateway does, where, you know, our Salt Lake Tribune... I'm currently at the Gateway. At our Salt Lake Tribune offices down there, but, like... The Trib has like 50 people who work for it rather than like the thousands and thousands of people who work for Papa John's or Comcast or whatever, right? Like, so you do, because it is a work and live kind of situation, you do just get kind of more natural density, I think, that you could really feel when you're walking around.
Okay. I mean, my sense is like with the stadium downtown and with the stadium proposal in the Fair Park, in both cases, you know, you really want to figure out how to be utilizing the space around them when there isn't a game happening. But the thing about an NBA arena is that it can also host concerts. How likely, like, are there concerts at the Braves district?
So they have their own concert venue there that seats, I think, 5,000. Kind of like the complex is right next to the Delta Center, or I guess not. It's kind of close, I guess. It's much bigger than the complex is, but... So they've had bigger acts there. But, you know, honestly, they don't use as – they just – the stadium itself is used for baseball games, and that's pretty much it. Now, there are 81 home dates for baseball rather than just 41 for basketball, so you get double that.
That is something, by the way, that like the economic research has looked at a little bit is like, hey, maybe arenas are a better deal because you get, you know, concerts and those kind of things come to an arena more than you do like a baseball stadium, for example. Turns out you still see like kind of the same economic problems, whether or not you have a ton of Taylor Swift concerts or whatever. Because, you know, frankly, there's only one Taylor Swift concert. you know, there's only one huge event.
Potentially every decade.
Right, right. Like... Yeah. But, it doesn't change the calculus of you have people there sometimes, but not all the time.
Yeah. Okay, so you've mentioned that research shows time and time again that a public investment in private sports endeavors doesn't necessarily pencil out for taxpayers in terms of economic stimulus. That said, we as taxpayers are still going to be funding somewhat this NHL NBA stadium downtown and the MLB district in the Fair Park. What should we be asking for? Like, it feels like we have sort of a small window to lay out our demands.
Yeah, and, you know, we actually, there are some representatives of the people on kind of the boards that can decide these things, right? Like, there's kind of a 5-person board on each of these projects. The ballpark project, to be clear, is much more strict and laid out than the arena project is, which is, like, still in super early phases of planning and frankly, ideation. I think we're mostly in, like, Ryan Smith imagination land on the stadium downtown. The ballpark one, they actually have really good, like, renderings and kind of plans for. But to me, like, I think because we do have taxpayer representation on this board, I think we have to make it really clear that it's kind of for all Salt Lake residents and all Utahns rather than just, like, the elite, right? Like, so I think you have to have affordable housing to some degree, and I think a significant degree, especially in the ballpark project, which has a ton of acreage and can really open that up, I think. I think we have to insist on, like, affordable rent for businesses as well, so you're not just getting, like, California Pizza Kitchen-style chains in these kind of places, but instead you're actually getting, like, local restaurants that we're familiar with or just new mom-and-pop establishments that kind of feel they can open up there. I think that has to be a real concern that, like, hey, this is actually attached to the community and not just, like, a place where we can open up a Yard House, you know?
Right. We don't want it to look like South Salt Lake.
No, exactly.
Shout out to South Salt Lake. I love South Salt Lake.
Or you know, I mean, frankly, South Salt Lake has some, you know, like, local breweries or whatever, right? Like, we don't want it to be South Jordan more than I think we don't want it to be South Salt Lake, right?
Good,
like,
point, yeah.
I wrote an article on this. I really do want the outdoor alcohol thing. From what I heard, state legislators, when they went out to the Battery in Atlanta, were influenced by how safe it felt, despite that people were walking around with beer. I don't know for sure that we're going to get that, but I don't think that it's impossible in a way that I once did. So that's good. I think, again, like, maximizing community events there is going to be key, kind of an open event space. That's something that the Battery in Atlanta has that's pretty cool, is kind of an open green space where they can throw, like, an outdoor, small outdoor concert or something like that. They have what they call Braves Fest every year, where they just have a weekend kind of dedicated to their fans. And they had, like, a Braves fashion show on a catwalk out there. They have, like, autograph sessions where fans can get, autographs from the team. You know, stuff like that. I think, like, there really needs to kind of be, like, an emphasis on, like, hey, we're paying $1 billion in taxes for this. Like, what are you going to bring to the table on this?
Yeah.
And then while we want multiple ways of getting to these places and biking is important and public transit's important, like, I just also want affordable parking and parking that makes sense, that's not above ground but is also not $50. Parking at the Battery for Braves games is like $50. Personally, I love getting to games in other ways besides cars. I also think that, like, if taxpayers are paying for this to the extent that they will, charging them $50 a game for parking is a lot. You know, I think it can be the Gateway's $10 or $15 and we'll be fine.
And can I just say, I mean, I know Larry Miller didn't make his money selling bikes. He made it selling cars. But boy, would it be nice if there was a bike rack at the Delta Center, right?
Yeah,
like, how about a bike valet? How about, like, some of these kinds of things? And then also, ticket is fair. I was so surprised. I set some friends down to the Royals game. I was out of town, and they assumed their ticket was fair for getting on the tracks down to America First Stadium. There really only are a few venues that offer you that option, but like, if we're putting our public tax dollars into financing this arena, I want to be able to ride the tracks there for free if I have a ticket.
Absolutely, yeah, and there should be bike valets and bike parking situation. I mean, these intra downtown options, or even, you know, the Fair Park being a couple miles away, there really should be, and especially on the Jordan River Parkway, like there should be easy ways to get to these places. That the Delta Center doesn't already have something better than what it does, I think is really bad. It's, you know, problematic and something that they can fix right away, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, I think Andy Larson, when it comes to how you and I both opine about the city and the state and its growth and whatever, like, I don't know that we both have a reputation for being optimists. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you more than me.
No, I don't.
We
think
tend
so.
To be critics. Sometimes we've both been called haters online or otherwise. I do think in this conversation, we are trying really hard to be optimistic about these proposals. But I cannot let you go without asking you to really clarify here. Who are these deals for? Like, we're really being sold as Salt Lake residents on the idea that this is for us. It's a celebration of our community. We should all be on board. Like, let's get the parade going. But who is actually going to benefit most from these deals? Is it us?
I love the idea that the Jazz are staying downtown, right? Like, that is awesome.
Same.
Right?
Total same.
When you do studies of, if you ask residents, so for example, in the 90s, the Pittsburgh Penguins were leaving Pittsburgh, were threatening to leave Pittsburgh. And they asked Pittsburgh residents, hey, how much are the Penguins worth to you? How much more in taxes would you pay if the Penguins stayed? They got an estimate and multiplied the survey, you know, across the population of Pittsburgh, estimated that the Penguins were worth about like $5 million in value to Pittsburgh residents, right? Like, that's what they said the Penguins were worth to them. I think if you interviewed, you know, Utah residents, that you'd get probably a higher number for the Jazz, in especially given it's 2024. But like in the 10 to 15 million range or something like that, you're not getting $1 billion. And so I think that's where it comes down to for me, is like, who's really benefiting from this is the Ryan Smith and the Miller family billionaires, right? Like the people who already have this set up. You know, it was interesting. I got the chance to listen to a forum they had at the Gardner Center where State Senator Lincoln Fillmore was talking about why he voted for this. And he said, I don't know why it's different to have sports in a different category than retail or housing in terms of what we subsidize as a state. And I thought that was really interesting, that the state is very used to subsidizing developers in other ways. I'm not supporting that kind of subsidization either. You know, I don't really want the Walmart to be built either, you know? And I think that's kind of the big thing here, is like, in the end, we're just giving too much of our taxpayer dollars to these jobs incentives. And you know, whether it's Ryan Smith keeping Salt Lake City, you know, kind of hostage a little bit in terms of keeping the Jazz downtown, or whether it's the Millers saying, hey, you guys don't get baseball unless you accept and want this. You know, I think that's really tough. And I think in the end, there are ways we can do these projects that sports teams are so profitable to those who own them, we don't need to give them $1 billion on top of it.
Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune Jazz Beat reporter, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks again for having me.
That is all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Stay vigilant.